Accession number 17618, Thomas Atkinson, reel 9.
Atkinson, reel 9. You're taken prisoner and moved to Berserta. What happened to you then?
Oh, there are 2 or 3 days, and it seemed like 2 or 3 days, and the next thing was marched off to the prison ship. That was the ship that was taking us from Berserta to, presumably, Italy.
Had you been handed over to Italians by this stage?
No. No, it was a German ship. We're still with the Germans, put on the ship. There was a hell of a lot of us on that ship. And we were down in the hold. And I think they must have had about one day's ration for all these people. And the boat didn't move out for several days. And they blamed it on our airplanes bombing them, and they wouldn't move out. And they still just had about one day's ration for the lot of us. And we were down in the bowels of the ship, and I remember of waking up and smelling bacon and fried sausages and fried tomatoes. And you know one thing about a ship, it's all iron. There's not even a bit of bloody grass that you could get into a ship. There's no chance of getting anything to eat. At least if we're on land, we might be able to pluck a few blades of grass or find us a spud or something to eat. We were bloody starving. But after two or three days, quite a lot of them had dysentery. And
conditions must have been dreadful.
Oh, yeah, they had dysenteries and things like that, and on board the ship. And when you've got dysentery and you're sick, you don't feel like eating anyhow. But
people around you, crammed in around you.
Yeah, yeah. Terrible. What they used to do, they did just let us up on deck for a short while in groups at a time.
And but how did you do manage for toilets and washing?
I don't ever remember being able to get a wash there at all, and toilets. I haven't got a clue. I don't ever remember any toilets.
So whatever you did had to be done on the deck then?
On deck or something like that? Yeah, it seemed like... yeah, that's what the impression I got. It was only ordinary merchant ship, and there wasn't any facilities for... I suppose there was facilities for the crew. And maybe it's when you went up in groups, you probably had one toilet that you could have used, you know.
Was it an Italian ship?
No, I think it was a German crew.
After several days, as you say, you were obviously very hungry and tired and probably dirty and smelling.
Yeah.
You would obviously sail.
We did sail, yeah.
Was that a bit of a worry for you, crossing the...
No, that worried... No, all we wanted was to get into land where there was... You might get something to eat or drink properly, you know. And they did eventually... go to Naples, and we were taken off at Naples and transferred to a prison camp.
The transfer to the prison camp, did you have to march through the streets of Naples to show yourself, show you to the...
We had to march through the streets to the train.
What was that like with the Italian...
Well, it was just like your cattle trucks, like we was jammed in.
The march itself, though, through the streets would have the civilians looking at you.
Oh, yeah, they did, yes, uh-huh, yeah. But
were they shouting at you? Or?
No, they weren't. No, I think the Italians were feeling sorry. They feel sorry for you. I think they're quite a loving nation, really, the Italians. I remember the poor Ophelia de Mamma. That was poor her son, some mother's son. Like, you know, that was, the women were quite on your side.
You got through to the cattle trucks where, again, you were crammed in.
Oh, crammed in, yes. Yeah.
And where did you go then?
We went to Capua. I don't know many miles. Well, it's not very far from... Capua's not very far from Naples. And we went in... I think it was a good thing to eventually get there into the prison camp, and you're stripped off and examined and all sorts of things, you know, and eventually get put in a compound. One thing that strikes me was that at that time I'd never seen a flea, I'd never seen a lice or anything. But after 2 or 3 days, they took all our clothes away and we were left with a blanket. And they took the clothes away for fumigation. And they come back with these clothes. All we had was a blanket. We weren't cold then, round you. And we put these clothes on and thought, oh, great. But that night, the first night, everybody was bitten alive. I think they went away and inserted fleas and things on them, because I can remember chaps standing there, bollock naked. Wouldn't it be great to be without fleas and, you know? And from then on, it seemed that we spent all our time killing fleas. Lice hadn't turned up by this time. But what we used to do was get the blankets on them all and put them out in the sun and wet your finger and dab about 6 fleas at a time and kill them off, and then that's how you deal. You try to get rid of fleas, but you never get rid of the buggers. You just kept them down.
I should have asked this earlier. What date was the attack that you made?
Sometime in March, wasn't it?
And then you captured them 2 or 3 days. So what kind of period are we talking about now? What date did you get to the prison camp?
Well, we're talking about from the time we went into the attack to the prison camp would be about 2 weeks, 12 days, something like that.
Around about the middle to the end of March?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, did the prison camp have a name or a number?
Yes, Capua prison camp was PGs 66.
And was it purely NCOs and other ranks, or did you have officers with you?
There was no officers there, it was NCOs and other ranks, yeah.
Can we have a look at the prison camp? What was the accommodation?
Well, they had these wooden beds, and two tiers, sometimes three tiers, and jammed together. It was pretty tight. And we weren't in PG 66 too long to really get the hang of it. And by the time we got moved up to Maserata, which was PG 53, we were beginning to see the bed bugs from the lice.
Were they feeding you okay?
Very poorly, very poorly.
What were you getting?
I used to call them penny buns, but bread, one a day. It's the sort of thing you'd buy for a penny back home. And you'd get one of them, and then at lunchtime you got a bowl of skilly, soup of a kind, which was more water than anything. And you got a piece of cheese once a week, I think. And 2 days or 3 days a week, the soup contained meat. Never saw the meat, like. But it's supposed to have meat in it. The only meat I saw, I remember looking through the window of the cookhouse where they were, and looking at a big black object, and then I realised the black object was flies. The meat covered in bloody great big flies. No wonder there was a lot of dysentery about. And there was one or two amusing things. There was the...
How many meals did you get a day, if you can call them that?
One.
One main meal.
One meal, that's all you got. That's all you... You'd have starved if you only had that. But the Red Cross parcels, they kept you going.
Did they come quickly?
Well, we used to, most interest in the camp, when you were in the camp, was rumours, news, and had the Red Cross parcels arrived. That seemed to be the main subject. And cigarettes was currency. Everything you wanted, you could buy if you had enough cigarettes. But you didn't. When the Red Cross parcels come through, you used to get your 7 a day, you see. Because one box used to contain 50, and you used to share them out, and you got 7. But around the camp, there was the racketeers. There was this big bloke, and he used to run all the Crown anchor boards around the camp. And he used to speculate, maybe a couple of cigarettes out of your ration to see if you could win more. And you wouldn't attempt to run a board yourself, because he would swamp you. He wouldn't kick it about or do it. He'd just get enough cigarettes to break you, you know. And if you saw his compound, it was like Finlay's tobacco players. He had more bloody cigarettes than Finlay's did. Racketeer. And he used to run everything. He used to run all the gambling, anything that went on, races, and you could have a bet with him. It was all done in cigarettes. He used to even run an auctioneer's, where if you had a tin of something you didn't like, he'd auction it and get you something you did like, with probably a couple of cigarettes to in exchange. You know, that's how he ran his rackets.
Do you remember his name?
I can't remember his name. He wasn't close enough to me, but he was a Geordie. He was a Newcastle bloke. And the last impression I saw of him is when we were coming out of the camp that morning, and he had the civilians lined up, and he was flogging them Italian bloody blankets. When we come out of the camp, there was about 6 or 7 of us come out. Mind, we were told not to go leave the camp.
We'll come to that, yeah. Actually, because it's a very important part of the story.
Yeah.
Can we come back to the first camp again? You were sleeping in bunks, the food was very poor. What was the hygiene situation? Although you've already mentioned fleas.
Well, the hygiene in these places was like just a slits in the ground inside of canvas or dunes, and there was a little bit wash showering facilities which you could have. Weren't too bad in PG 66. And I remember this sergeant, he seemed to be well off with the authorities, and he used to run boxing tournaments, and if you went in the ring, you got a couple of loaves of bread. Yeah, these penny buns. If you volunteered to go in for this was entertainment for the troops. And they used to put on entertainment in the camp as well, which the Italian officers used to attend, with a strict ruling, no patriotic songs. So the lads used to get up and do all these men dressed as women and whatnot, and a few jokes and that, you know. And at the end of the concert, no patriotic songs, and I'll bet your life the first thing that struck up was Land of Hope and Glory. Well, it used to put a thrill down your back listening to Land of Hope and Glory. And the ITI officers used to fume. They couldn't do nothing about it when you've got about several hundred, maybe 1,000 people singing Land of Hope and Glory, taking the top off the tents, you know. But it happened. Several concerts we had at PG 66, that's the way it ended up, with Land of Hope and Glory.
What were the Italians like as guards?
Oh, well, we used to flog things to them, and they used to flog things to us. And we used to cheat, and so did they. When we brewed tea, we used to put the leaves out on a blanket and dry them up and put them back in the bucket, didn't we? And the ITI guards was walking around there, was in tea or coffee, you know. Not coffee, was mostly cocoa. And we'd put five loaves for a tin of cocoa. Five loaves. And you would get the tin of cocoa, and of course it was full of sand. You had to put a bit of cocoa on the top, put the lid on, and throw it over, and he'd look out, push it in his pouch, and then he'd go, 1, 2. And you used to say, 5, 2. And they used to cheat us, so we cheated them. And they didn't say anything because they were illegal doing these things, you know.
So you were able to, in effect, bribe them to get from them what you wanted and give them.
Yeah, well, they were in a poor way. They were short of a lot of things as well. And as I say, when you got lousy and went to the M.O., he used to say, look, I'm lousy, them guards there's lousy. What can you do about it? All you can do is keep it down. Do you lousen?
Well, was there any brutality from the guards on some of the prisoners, any of the prisoners?
No, I didn't see any brutality at all in that respect. The only brutality I saw was when they used to line you up, about 2,000 of you, line you up, and you went through every morning, and you were counted. And you'd get 3/4 or so counted, and then they would start a recount because they'd lost somebody, I don't know. And they were... They weren't mathematicians because this counting business used to probably last hour or so, where it should have been over in minutes, counting them.
Were the prisoners stirring them up as well as making it
Oh, yeah, yeah, the prisoners used to, yeah, they used to stir them up and used to stir each other up. There's a lot of pastimes that they used to do, like... At night, you know, the prisoners used to walk round and round and round and round, and some of the bright boys used to put a lump of string across where they were marching, and every so often pull it tight, and 2 or 3 of them would fall on the pit. This was just amusement. And I tell you what, I saw homosexuality for the first time. I remember bloke in our compound, and he was very popular, very popular. And they used to pay him food and doing this for his favours and that, you know. And I've seen them walking around with holding hands around the prison camp, you know. The first time I'd ever seen anything like that.
Were they aside from the prisoners? Did the prisoners keep away from them? Or were they... cut off in that way?
Don't say, oh, you keep away from them.
No, I mean in the sense that...
You were all the density of the where you slept. And we had one or two little gadgets. We had a clock there that somebody made just out of tins, you know, Red Cross tins and that. And there was radios there which they'd assembled, and we used to get you, of course, rumours and news was the thing you were seeking all the time. And we used to get, a lot of it wasn't true, but you got quite a bit of information, because it's only that sort of thing that kept you going.
So you get some news of how the war was going?
Yes, yes, you got some. It wasn't always right, but the sergeant who was in charge of that camp, seemed to be in charge of camp, used to get us, assemble us together and start telling us what was happening, where the British troops were. You know.
Oh, so the radios would be illegal in the sense of
Oh, yeah, totally illegal, yeah. But I think if you had enough cigarettes and currency, you'd get what the hell you liked.
It must have been bribing the guards to bring in the parts.
To bring in the parts, yeah. Yeah. And I had a little gadget I wish I had one now. It was a little gadget which they made, and quite a number of blokes copied it. And you put shavings in the bottom, and you turned... the handle, and they'd give you the air going into it, and the flame used to, you could put your pot on the top of tea or whatever it was and boil it up inside the compound. And the shavings we got was off the beds. We used to get a razor blade and shave the beds.
Where did you get the materials for the many things that you would make?
Well, I think they used to use the Red Cross parcels. You used to even get dye, get the dye from the parcels, from the labels, which used to come. And the metal parts was, of course, the tins, which you used to cut up and make things with. It all come out of your Red Cross parcels.
It was using everything you could get hold of.
That you could get hold of, yes.
In some function, putting
yes.
it mm-hmm. into some way.
Yeah.
You've mentioned the sergeant that was running the camp. He must have been the senior NCO in the camp.
It seemed to be, yes.
Were the prisoners disciplined in the same way, you know, British Army discipline within that camp? You're still in the same
still
King's regulations and so forth?
Yeah, they're still kept to good discipline, yes. Yes. I used to be envious of the sergeant getting more than a snag at times, but I suppose that's human nature.
Were any men punished for anything? What, for example, would happen with stealing? Was there much stealing going on?
No.
And there must have been great demand for things that other people had.
Yeah, well, the few things you had used to keep, as far as I was concerned, is to get rid of them by eating. And the cigarettes you kept under tight control. It used to amuse me when you get the type of person, quite a few of them, used to get these penny buns. And they used to make three meals out of it. They used to cut them up into little tiny thin slices with a razor blade and put the butter or jam on it and put about six of them on a plate. All they've got is about a third of a penny bun. And sit down on with it and think they were getting a meal. But I was never like that. I used to slip my penny bun in half and put some jam or butter in it and eat it there and then, and whoop, I could scrounge something else for the rest of the day. And that we used to do. Not in PG 66. We haven't moved up there yet. Up to Maserati.
Food must have been very much on your mind.
The things that was on your mind was food, first and foremost. Secondly, news. Sex didn't come into it. Never thought about it.
Had you been worried when you were captured about how the people back home may have taken the fact that you were to be missing, of course?
Yeah, well, you're reported missing, aren't you? And you do worry about that, and you think, well, you never know. The British are doing very well in Africa, and they're going to land in southern Italy, and we could see an end to it coming, that we wouldn't be there that long.
Did the Germans or Italians take details of your... of yourself, of course, name and so forth, so that they could send that on to the authorities to...
Yes, I think they must have done, yeah. Of course, we were informed, that we... and then that we had these cards which we could write home with, you see. In fact, I still got one of the cards which my mother was sent to my mother.
How did your family get to know that you were a prisoner?
The War Office must have notified them, yes, eventually, yeah.
It's quite often the Vatican got out information with their radio.
Yeah, well, they were informed by the War Office eventually that I was taken prisoner. Yeah.
Who was the commandant of the camp, of your first camp? Did you see him very often?
I haven't got a clue. I know nothing about the Italian side of it. But
you were obviously wired in, were you? Were there all wooden huts that you were in?
But well and truly wired. You'd had your first row of wires, and then you had a gap, and then another row of wires. And if you got through that first row of wires, you'd get shot. The guards was all around the camp, weren't they? High up, you know. And if you were approached them wire, got through, you'd get a shot. Shoot you. Mm-hmm. And the Italians, I thought, were very, very trigger happy.
Just so some men would be shot?
No, I think they'd just shoot over their edge, like to say, get back, more or less, you know.
Did you have sport in this first camp that you were in?
They used to organise sports like Cumberland wrestling and a little bit of boxing and football. Soccer, but you could tell the difference between a prisoner that was being there 2 months and the one had been there 7 or 8 months, because the limbs and everything was white in spite of the sun, and they were also very frail, and it gave me the impression you couldn't last more than a year or so here under these conditions, because the food was There's some weeks you didn't get any Red Cross parcels, you know.
I was going to ask you how often they came.
Well, they were supposed to distribute it every week, but you might get gaps when there was none turned up. And there were the night I used to blame our bombing of the trains and things like that, you know.
Did you have any evidence that the Italians were taking any of these parcels?
No, didn't.
Did they do anything to the parcels before they were handed to you?
No, they were just handed to us as they were. I don't ever remember having a parcel handed to me. They were handed to probably a sergeant or somebody who was in, took charge of that particular part of the compound, you know, and he used to dish them out.
And you say there'd be one parcel for a certain number of men?
That's the way they used to do it, yes, one parcel.
Did the parcels vary in any way?
Yeah, you got several. You used to, those Canadian parcels, which is entirely different to some of the ones that come from Bermondsey in different parts of London, used to have the names on the parcels. And in some ways they liked the Canadians, and in some ways you liked the British parcel. The Canadian parcel used to contain butter, which ours didn't. But I mean, they weren't getting butter back home at the time, I don't think. And they had different meats and different things in there. And the contents, the weight and everything was about the same. But one from Bermondsey varied from one from some other part of the country. They used to mix them up a bit. And some of them had cocoa in, and some of them had tea. I don't think you ever got both. So one week you might get some tea, and one week get some cocoa.
Did you, in this first camp, which we're talking about at the moment, did you ever see any Red Cross officials coming to look at the camp?
No.
Did they inspect regularly?
No, never. And I don't remember. No. Maybe it's the dead, but we never saw them.
You must have lost some weight.
No, I wasn't in there long enough to lost weight. I mean, I was... And
how long were you in this camp?
Are you talking about the first camp?
The first one, yes.
It didn't appear to be more than about 4 or 5 weeks, I don't know.
And then you moved on to, where did you say?
Maserata, that's up in the north of Italy. The reason we moved up north was because I think our troops had invaded.
Camp, I believe you said, did have a number.
53. The Maserata camp, yeah.
What was it like? In terms of the huts and the accommodation and so forth.
Well, I would imagine there was about 2,000 or 3,000 people in that camp. It was quite big, and the was more congested probably than PG-66. Yeah, I think they had three tiers together, so you had 2, 4, 6, you know, and they were very, very close together. And you soon found out that there was bugs about, you know.
Was it wooden huts again?
Oh yeah.
And were you split up into compounds?
Oh, different. Compounds, yes. And I remember to our right as I looked out was West Indians, I think. No, not West Indians, it would be West Africans in the next compound. And we used to look at them, and they were very military minded, and those obvious sandboys, it seemed, they loved it. They'll probably get doing better there than what they did back home. And they used to play soldiers, march up and down. And they were different to us because they used to go out in working parties. And when they went out in working parties, they used to come back with food. Might be potatoes or bread and things like that. And we used to try and barter with them for the extra food, you see. And I think I started off with British uniform, British vest, British shoes, British everything, and gradually I went down until you had the lowest of the low, which is the Italian boots. You swap one pair of boots and a few loaves and with them, and your vest, your thick vest, went awkward. I remember that summer, God help us if we ever had to live there with a during the winter, during the cold weather, because all the thick vests had gone for food, because food was the main priority. And that's what we used to do, barter all the time.
And this was through bartering?
Through bartering, yes.